for the most part. Then at the same time we're doing that, we're cashing in our term insurance at this point.
One last question. Do we need to wait to 85, 6, and 7 before we distribute that, or?
I think
Senator Fadley wanted to distribute it to someone other than who it's designed for last special session and pay it back. I'm sure glad we did.
Distribute it there. He wanted to use it.
Yes.
To
borrow
it. About putting it in where we intended to put it, but sooner. Why hold it there gathering interest?
Because, my view of it is that it, again, helps hold them somewhat harmless over that for a longer period of time.
I have to do some specific work before I would start betting portions of my salary on doing this. The chances of any significant amount being necessary to hold harmless from now until 87, when it would be all out anyway, is at least minimal, if not
small. The appreciable rate value of timber is what you're saying. With the appreciation of value of timber, with our decline, the exportation of our raw lumber in some areas is what's driving some of the price up. And I assume that's why that whole harmless hasn't been used hardly at all.
Just a question on the interest that the money's earning. Does the interest stay in the account?
Yes. Yeah, that's what's built it up. That's what's built it up from 9 to 12. I can get more exact data as to how much has actually gone out, but I think only a couple hundred thousand of that's gone out of the account. Most of it's been, you're earning 10% for, 3 or 4 years. There's your 30% increase.
And the interest also will be distributed.
Yes. The interest is dedicated back to the at this point.
They got large enough, they might want to stretch that out, but getting it back.
The way the current law would distribute one-third for each of those years.
That's going to create a real new ballgame in budgeting for all those districts, isn't it? Take the Douglas County case here of last year. They were told by the Forest Service and ONC and everybody just how much money they would get. And they went, they cut substantially under that by $7 or $8 million in their budgeting process out of fear. And had they budgeted for the full amount, they would have been in millions of dollars in the red because it did not materialize. And all those districts after 87, they're going to have to get an estimate from the people that own the timber, I would think, what's going to happen with cut, aren't they?
Well, I think one would expect there would be potentially more variability in the estimated revenue per district. Now, the alleviating factors of that, eliminating, I guess, is that most districts will have some, districts are large enough such that there's kind of the statistical wash on cut, and that so. Your smaller districts would be the ones to have more of a problem. Then the larger you are, the more cut's going to average out in your district. Sure. Secondly, is that only 75% is based on cut in the final distribution. 25% is still is really fixed factor. I'm oversimplifying a little bit. We still went with Leslie the 10. I think was. Maintain some base such that we're 100% being able to fluctuate a lot, we're only letting 75% be able to fluctuate a lot.
Mr. Chairman, one example of this, we were advised in Marion County, one of the reasons we're in such a hole, that they gave us advice, so certain revenues would be down. They didn't take the advice, they budgeted the same amount they received the previous year. That's one of the jams we got. And we took their advice and cut below. Came out with more receipts this trip around, and you're absolutely right. That's going to have a very definite effect on,
particularly like a school district that might have timber.
For sure,
their boundaries are so small.
It's almost worse because you're really, it's a marketplace. who can bid on the sales. Maybe the sales are too high. People decide to avoid it. There's all sorts of ingredients that they have no control and really don't know.
Yeah, and when they and when the sale is finalized, and when the cut actually takes place,
with the contracts being 3 to 5 years,
sure, they might not.
That's
might
right. Cut the first I forgot about that. Third. Sure, they might get the contract and wait until the fifth year to cut.
Yeah, yeah. It could be a a significant problem for some of them in the timber.
Could I ask a question? Another on this whole harmless. If they get in those type of fluctuations, does that come into play?
Well, the hold harmless is only with respect to the amount of dollars that they get.
Okay.
I think it's separate from the problem, the concerns you have over what's going to be the estimate that I use in preparing my proposed levy as versus what actually.
Well, I understand up. That, but if let's say that well, of course it won't have much bearing, but for the next 2 years, if our revenues were below what you'd received previously.
That would have more of a tendency to shove you into the hold harmless situation.
And it could, the appreciated value could be up there, but because of the gyrations and the cuts, would that affect it?
I'm sorry.
All right, let's say that in a particular area, they decide that instead of cutting in those areas, we're just not going to do that right there. We're just not going to do that. Let's say in a given area, you could have a school district.
And you only pay the tax on the harvest in timber, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The appreciable tax.
Let's try it again, okay? Let's say that they bid on it. You get the bid, you're ready to cut, they decide because of certain market things, they don't cut. Okay?
Okay.
Now they are going to cut this. Will this, if that type of thing happens and it drives it below that minimum, would this whole harmless clause apply?
Yes.
That's what I want.
For the next 2 years.
That's what yes, for the next 2 years, but it could apply even though they started the fact they're going to sever it, there's a legitimate bid. So it would take care of that fluctuation.
Yeah, we have now. I just want to define the example that we've just built up is really an extreme example, because right now, if I am in a district that my cut's way down, that money goes into a big pot, and then I get back a proportion based on some past factors that we have to be into the timber tax account all the way, or darn close. You know, we have to be closer here to 87 before. Here's your example. The 75% is based on cut before the cut in my district starts to really impact how much dollars I get back in a given year.
Well, Senator Powell's observation is that if we got into those gyrations, that's why that fund maybe should be left alone temporarily until it phased out, because we could get into some problems of that nature. Is what he's trying to, I think you're trying to say.
Still, I think it's unlikely. I mean, it's just okay. It's unlikely, because the 25%, when we get to 86, the 25% is going to be 75% of the total of the guarantee already. I mean,
yeah,
it's just the general inflation and the amount of tax dollars are coming from that.
Senator Monroe?
It appears that one thing we might want to consider would be to stretch that payout over more than 3 years. Stretch it over 6 years, or how many years do we have till then? You know, about 6 years. Be one possibility, or one thing that we could possibly look at, which would soften the differential with respect to school districts and other local districts in terms of the differences between how much money they get between now and 84, and then for those 3 years, and so on. And also would start giving them some of that money now when BASIC is dropping sharply and when they may need it. I don't know. I don't know if that's something that's wise or not. It would still leave a considerable amount in that fund up until those last couple of years in case there is a need for a hold harmless, like Senator Day suggested, and it would spread it out over, you know, over more years, give them money when they need it, maybe.
I was thinking they'd want to stretch out on the other end after 87 to soften the potential of that. Since there does not appear to be a problem with cutting that sort of thing now, that they might want to extend it the other way in case for the next recessionary cycle or something, if there is such a thing.
Well, anyway, whichever way it be done, I'm concerned about about the impact of the budgetary decisions that we're going to make on local districts in the next biennium, in the 81-83 biennium, I really am. And if we have money available, such as this money, that we could start funneling to those local taxing districts. It's not going to help my district any.
Yeah, right.
You know, we get zero timber in my district, but you know, except in parks, and we're not allowed to cut that. But you know, I just think for, you know, for those districts that do rely heavily upon timber receipts, that it might be beneficial, and maybe we should ask some of the local representatives from some of those districts.
We pushed some money toward them last time, didn't we? Wasn't there a fund that we distributed early last session? Some monies to timber receiving school districts for districts in general.
I'm sorry, I just
seemed like Sweet Home got some extra money as a result of.
Now, well, okay. Now there was some problems in the department's calculation on, because they distribute this, they were distributing it on a quarterly basis. There was an adjustment by which some districts got more than they expected for one quarter, actually. I suspect that that's what happened.
I think the bottom line lesson with that $12 million is that we're just lucky we didn't borrow it, or you'd be adding $12 million to the bottom line of this deficit situation. Senator Trope?
I was just wondering what percentage of that money would go to schools. You got any idea?
About two-thirds.
I was guessing 80.
Senator Hammond, that's a rough guess.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I raised the question, I've got more than one district which, through a combination of circumstances, is going to have extreme difficulty this next biennium, and they would benefit substantially from this because they're right in the timber country. So I'd like to see the committee consider that seriously.
You might communicate with them and to see what, you know, what their preference is, if they wanted to, if they would like to talk about it too, you know, those districts. The danger is, it appears to me, we have a system built in to try to protect them. Apparently, that's working. The 85, 86, 87 is going to be some revenue then when there is much less of a device to protect them. So if you distribute some of that money now, they're giving up the potential softening if we were in trouble, or if they were in trouble in those years as well. So they might want to consider pushing it up.
Okay. Anyway, this is basic Western Oregon system. The land, indexed land values, severance tax, proposed 6.5%, distributed via this complicated system of moving from the ad valorem 77 to a full or near full severance base. We still keep this 25% fixed factor. By 1987. We have an option in Western Oregon for people who have small woodlots, less than 2,000 acres. That is a tax called the Western Oregon Small Woodlot Option. If an owner chooses this option, given less than equal to 2,000 acres, they're exempt from both of these systems, and that system is replaced by a calculation by the state forester that determines a value on these lands, for the land and the timber, based on productivity measures, its site class, what kind of quality of land it is. The law specifies the forester shall access certain tables of potential volumes from that land. And this small woodlot, then those values are put on the rolls just as it goes on the ad valorem system. But it is the land and the timber together. If one wants to compare over a rotation period or in a given year, however, the small woodlot option is to the advantage of primarily to the advantage of that timber owner in terms of tax liability in measuring it via productivity measures that are specified and with respect to how the forester calculates those values. It's kind of a form of special assessment for small woodlot owners. The statistics are in the report with respect to small woodlot. I think we have about 2,465 owners with about 156,000 acres of land currently choosing that option. In general, it is a form of special assessment for these small owners.
Does it work out to be less onerous than the severance tax program would have been if it were in place?
I'm sorry.
Less onerous? Is it a better deal for them than if they were in conventional taxes?
I think under the severance tax, yes. I think in general you could say that. There could be a situation where if one had to choose, depending on where one is in one's rotation cycle, one might want to, I was trying to think of an example. If you had bare land, and you were going to be taxed to be the ad valorem system on a small woodlot until for the next 60 years so you could grow timber on that, you might want to choose the severance tax. But for most owners of land in which there are existing trees, they would be better under the small woodlot. Now that's making some, I'm sure you can probably find examples of that not being the case, but with the majority of the examples that we have, it is a form of a preferential treatment for the small compared to their option in this case, which is that they still have the option of being under severance tax if they choose, and some have chosen to still do that. Not all people who qualify for small woodlot options have chosen it.
Does this have the effect of encouraging people to invest in small woodlots?
That was the rationale, I think, when the original legislation. I mean, it simply means. It's as other special treatments are, is a shift in tax. You didn't have it towards the other surrounding properties, which for small woodlots still tends to be in the forest classification.
Terry, how many acres under small woodlots?
156,000.
Okay.
If I remember right, and I worked on this in 1977, another reason for the small woodlot provision was to encourage those people who own these small woodlots to harvest, because under the severance tax, there would be a deterrent to harvest. Whereas if they're under the if they're under severance and they harvest, then they have to pay the tax immediately.
Right.
But if they're under small woodlot, they don't pay the tax on the basis of harvest, and so they would be encouraged to harvest when the timber's ready to harvest and get the money for them. Isn't that right?
Okay. Well, okay. I think we have two issues going here. One with respect to what's the capability from a cash flow standpoint, and maybe that small woodlot owner being able to hold on to that timber. I see your argument. Generally, the rationale for the severance tax is that it decreases the holding. Decreases the cost of holding timber, that you don't, because you're not paying this ad valorem every year on this growing tree, and building up this bill against it that sort of wants you to, cut it sooner than you might otherwise do, because you keep this negative cash flow to this investment that you may want to cut it too soon. So you put in a severance tax so you don't pay any tax till you actually cut it. So we're trying to make the tax more neutral. That doesn't impact on the decision as to when the value of the tree is maximized.
Well, I remember
that's the rationale.
I remember discussing the issue of the fact that a lot of these small woodlots were not being productively used. They were basically just kind of sitting there, and how, when we need more, and there was a lot of talk in 1977 about how we need more timber, for our mills and so on. We need, more supply of timber to keep the price at a reasonable level and so on, and how one of the sources of getting more timber were all these small woodlots.
Yeah, but realize that at the time, before we had imposed the severance tax, the small woodlot owner may have been paying the full ad valorem on those standing trees every year. That, I mean, your analysis still applies on the small woodlot, but when they choose a small woodlot option, instead, as versus under what previously was the ad valorem system, this value based on productivity is so much lower. Now we've decreased their tax bill each year, such that they're not forced to cut until there's less, there's less impetus to cut, because they can hold it for another year and rather pay a real high tax bill to do that, they can pay a lower tax.
But I think the point is that those who were ready or had marketable timber would choose the small woodlot option, because when they harvested, they did not have the big severance bill to pay. They could then take the money they otherwise would pay in taxes to buy trees to reforest or whatever, and thus they would have the money. So I think it would have had that effect, and I recall those arguments as well, that it would cause people who've got maybe their grounds not growing enough trees per acre, they've got some big trees out there, now's the time to go out and cut them and then prepare this site with new seedlings and get it coming on. The people that did that, I would think, if they had a stand at all, would choose the small woodlot option. Then in a few years, maybe 10 years or 15 years, as I understand it, they can switch over to the severance at some point and switch over and hold on that base.
One thing, by the way, we do require on a small woodlot option is that, I'd have to reference the exact requirements, that the timber has to be below a certain size on going into it. So, the owner doesn't go ahead and go under severance and wait till the year before he cuts and then put the small woodlot in the pit.
I had another.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah. On the site 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, the determination of which is the appropriate made by the assessor.
I do not know.
The answer is no.
Okay, who determines whether I've got a small woodlot? Who determines whether that's site 1, site 2,
forestry.
Site 3?
Forestry.
Department of Forestry.
Just like agriculture has a set of soil classifications.
Now, next question is, does the assessor, though, then didn't determine the value?
No. The values are entirely determined by the state forester.
Okay, now, are those values upgraded every year?
Yes. They're recalculated each and every year.
But the assessor then has nothing to do with whatsoever with the value of small woodlots?
No.
Why is that?
We in our wisdom saw to it.
Well, I don't think they feel they have the expertise.
It was a political decision in this legislature who made that decision.
The legislature was very specific, fairly specific on how it instructed the state forester to actually calculate those values, too. So there's
some people in agriculture that would like to be given the assessment of agricultural lands to the Department of Agriculture for the same purpose. I'm sorry, not to be trite.
Well, I understand that, and I guess I'd like to know whether or not how the assessors, whether the assessors in fact like it that way or feel that they don't have the expertise, whether there's some real justification other than political, and whether, whether or not there's any other authority that could tell us whether those values are realistic.
Okay, now watch it. This is not, and I don't believe one can say that it was the intent of the legislature to define a system here by which you reach market value. I don't think, this is a derived value, and I think it's fairly well documented that this is probably significantly below market value. I mean, it is a form of special assessment that we that there's a formula and some latitude on the part of the state forester.
In some way, like the farm assessment, it's designed to what that property is worth to produce timber, and outside of what you might sell it for if you could possibly put houses on it, or if you could use it for a camp and charge an entrance fee or whatever. It's separate from that, and quote unquote its value as far as raising
timber.
It takes 80 years to grow standard timber, and you amortize it all out, and then you figure the value of that timber when you cut it, and then you divide that by 80, and you subtract all your expenses.
I think that's where the assessors...
You end up with a negative value.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where the assessors come from, though. It'd be like if you were the assessor in Linn County, and somebody said, why don't you go out to Western Craft and assess their plant? And you go, ooh, we don't do that very often. I don't know whether anybody in my office can do that. And
with the state and have them do it.
With trees and that kind of thing, I would imagine you'd want, you'd have to rely on someone else in part. The assessor would have to send out and say, test the soil or whatever and give me a report on that, unless they develop that expertise in-house. Senator Day?
I think that's right. Of course, a raging argument. Point of severance versus half bargain was the fact that people were really forcing cuts sooner and then trying to slow that down on a sustained deal. What I want to know is, on this woodlot, how much has that acreage increased over the last couple of years?
You mean total acres? Not very much. We haven't had a dramatic growth in the amount of lands being, the amount of individuals choosing this option. I can get data for you.
Because you don't know from this data whether or not there's more land in production today than there was 5 years ago.
We did an estimate several years ago. The reason I'm asking that there are about 3 million acres in Oregon that could be put in this type of operation. That's why I was asking. I think it's such an insignificant amount. You just wonder. I know that along the Willamette River, we have farmers who plant these saplings and do it both from a standpoint of soil erosion, but they also harvest it. Imagine if we were to look at that, we'd find a lot of those people in that because they sever that about every 3 or 4 years, if I recall, and harvest it and put new in because those trees grow so fast. But I don't know. I think it's disappointing we don't have a program that can really get at those.
A question on the severance tax. Do other states have a severance tax system somewhat like ours?
Yeah, Washington.
How about the rate? Are our rates constant with what other states are doing?
They're not far from the range. I haven't done a study on it or to update the information that was developed in '77 when we imposed our tax rate. At the time, I suspected that our 6.5 was probably above the average, purely statistical average. But certainly, I can generate that comparative information for you. One of the problems is it gets a little different anytime we're trying to compare from state to state because we can't hold everything else constant or everything else the same. And comparing the severance tax when we're taxing the land on indexed value system and Washington's got some other system, I guess I'm just questioning.
You can't really compare.
One might be careful as to how strong one drew conclusions on the basis of what the severance tax rate is. Not that it couldn't give you an indication, but it might not be the whole story of the level of taxation in respect to that asset.
Senator Monroe.
Mr. Chairman, to continue, though, Washington relies less heavily on the property tax because they have a sales tax. They have a three-tax system. We have a two-tax system. So since the severance tax, in effect, replaces the ad valorem property tax, it appears that it would be a better figure if you could find it would be what is the relationship of the Washington timber tax to other Washington property taxes, and is the relationship between the level of Oregon timber taxes to Oregon property taxes approximately the same?
That potentially you might be able to draw more valid conclusions from it was my examples for holding everything else constant.
How much more time?
As much time as you want to get. I'm sorry, we've kind of got stuck here in Western Oregon.
You've been given too long answers again today.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a problem.
Look on your answers.
From now on, it's a yes and no question. That's options in Western Oregon. If we can, Eastern Oregon has and has had for some time a severance tax. It is at 5%. They do have the land under the timber in eastern Oregon is taxed according to the ad valorem system. It's not indexed in eastern. It's appraised by the county assessor. Now, I suspect that sometime during this session, in talking about land values in western Oregon, probably the issue of the appraisal of eastern Oregon land values by the assessor will be brought forward. We have this huge case in western Oregon land values. We've had a number of cases of litigation in eastern Oregon by county or groups of counties. So we do have a kind of a similar history of a lot of litigation with respect to land, the underlying land values. And when we get into the issue, we'll talk about the technical problems are there on land value. So in eastern Oregon, we have a severance tax. In eastern, that's 5%. We have lands on ad valorem system. We do not have a small one lot option in eastern Oregon. One other classification. So that's basically the system in eastern Oregon. Severance tax, land on the ad valorem system, no small woodlot option. We have had one other tax. It's really being phased out. It's sort of disappeared. We know it's not in the statutes anymore specifically. What was a forced fee and yield option? It was